At 22 minutes after the hour, you're in tune with Broken Road Radio, and we're in tune with Dr. Don Clark today. Don joins us from Garden Valley, Texas. Don is a biochemist and a member of the board at Creation Moments, and we talk to Don just about every Tuesday morning. Topics like faith and science and creation and just anything scientific. Don is our only scientist on staff here, so we rely on him to cover all branches of science. Don, and you're very versatile. We've learned that over the years.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Yes, it's just the discipline of science. It doesn't necessarily, matter which field you're in. You can always apply that to other fields.
Science is the word science really refers to a method of handling data and information, doesn't it?
Well, it does, in trying to analyze it in a logical way with putting together certain assumptions and then testing those assumptions to see whether they're right or not.
So if we use the word science and refer to science generally, it's probably pretty misleading. Probably we shouldn't do that. We should refer to those people in that particular niche or branch or corner of science. And, they're chemists and physicists. And would you call a mathematician a scientist? I mean, that's eminently logical.
He's not necessarily. Other fields, of course, use the math that the mathematicians come up with for various purposes, whether it's cosmology or chemistry or physics. A mathematician wouldn't necessarily be called a science because he's not using his math to let's say model something that he's observing.
Mm-hmm. So it is more theoretical probably than science, but you both use formulas and you both fill blackboards with stuff and you get to the end, the lower right hand corner, and you say, aha. I think that's the way it works. We have an article to discuss.
Scientists need mathematicians.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have an article to discuss today that caught my eye earlier. This is from the New Scientist Daily, which is a journal that I've been. I get emails from them with the most fascinating stories, and it's not a creationist journal. They've got some halfway science things, and so they don't get political though, and I appreciate that. The only thing is, you got to subscribe to this. So a lot of times I can't put a link in the Broken Road window and have somebody have access to the whole article, which is kind of a handicap here. But I did find one on African migration. And it's a short article, but it's very revealing, I think, because it's causing scientists to revamp, revise, correct earlier errors and opinions and decisions that they've made. And that's something that good science, properly applied, really does all the time, don't they?
Well, it does. And in this particular case, the study, this has been used now quite a lot to try to follow human migration. The study was a DNA study of maternal mitochondrial DNA.
Is that what the word mitochondrial means? Does that refer to mothers, the female
no,
side?
No.
What does it mean?
No, it's, well, mitochondria is an organelle in your cell. And it's often referred to as the powerhouse of the cell because it takes in, nutrients. It takes in glucose, for example, and then uses the energy to make adenosine triphosphate, which is a chemically energized substance or chemical, and that then is used throughout the cell to promote chemical reactions.
Uh-huh. So it's kind of a catalyst for things to happen.
It's kind of like the energy source for the for chemical reactions to take place in the cell.
Okay.
So the mitochondria, I mean, they first thought it was like a bacteria because it looks like a bacteria in itself, but it's a highly convoluted organelle, and it comes from the mother. The father's contribution to the mitochondria is zero because it's in the egg and not in the sperm when the egg and the sperm unite to form the embryo. And so if you look then at the mitochondrial DNA, and the mitochondria itself has its own DNA. It's not the DNA of what we normally think of as, you know, your copy of your DNA and my copy of DNA, and we look at that and we say, oh, they're different. And then when we look at each other and we say, oh, they look different. But the mitochondrial DNA is the DNA that's actually inside this organelle, inside the mitochondria, and the mitochondria, you know, can divide. It's just like the cell can divide, and so, but each cell, I mean, it needs mitochondria, needs the power plant, if you will, in order to survive and to do its chemical business. So if we look at the mitochondrial DNA, then we are looking at the ancestors through the mother's line. So, you know, it would be, if you look at my mitochondrial DNA and compared it to my mother's, it would be the same. Compare that to her mother, it would be the same. And it would, you know, you could go back through the line then and try to figure out where folks came from, and that's what,
you know,
that
seems somewhat sketchy to me, though, because it doesn't necessarily tell you where a person was born. It only tells you where the mother ultimately came from.
Right. It doesn't tell you where the father came from, obviously, mm-hmm. because it's you know, that information is not recorded in the mitochondria, but it does. It does trace the lineage of the mother, and hence, you know, the thought is that, well, where the mother was, the father had to be there, you know, too. But the father could have come from, you know, as you say, someplace else.
Well, can they take DNA from a male, though, and then follow the mitochondrial DNA trail?
Well, the DNA in a male, the mitochondria, that DNA came from his mother.
Mm-hmm.
Inside the mitochondria. So you can trace, you know, his lineage via that, and you can trace her lineage, the wife's lineage, via the mitochondria.
But he would not transmit that to his children.
No. It's only okay. It's
only
through
the female.
The mother.
Yeah, okay, gotcha.
Oh, it's only through the egg. Mm-hmm. So that's where, you know, that information is transferred. Anyway, they use this information to say, okay, let's see where this group of people came from and where their ancestors might have come from thousands of years ago. And so they did this with some folks that were in the sub-Saharan Africa, and the conclusion was, well, these ancient people must have crossed the Strait of Gibraltar about 1,300 years earlier than we thought.
Well, they're comparing the mitochondrial DNA of people who live in Andalusia, the southern area of Spain, with African DNA from South Africa, which is a long way away. And so they're revising their earlier thinking, because they're saying, well, this happened long before we originally thought. Because, by the way, there's a link to this article at brokenroadradio.com in the chat window. I think you can get, it's a very short article. I think you can get the whole article despite not subscribing to the service. It should show up. They had previously thought that it was just during the invasion of Islam into Spain 800 years ago, when all that DNA accumulated in those people in southern Spain. But now, because they can actually research the DNA, they've learned otherwise.
Well, they learned that, oh, gee whiz, it looks like, you know, this migration took place about 3,000 to over 4,000 years ago, which is interesting. That's an interesting dating, because that gets us in the time of the migration of peoples from the Tower of Babylon. So, you know, the flood, you know, if you look back at, you know, flood creation, flood theory, and you look back at the time frame for all of that, the flood, most creationists would put it approximately 4,500 years ago. It only took a year for the flood, you know, to subside and for Noah and his family to come out of the ark and then start populating the plain of Shinar in that area, and then the folks decided, well, you know, let's build a tower up to the heavens so that we can be like God.
Let's put this on a timeline a little bit. How many years between the flood and the Tower of Babel? Or Babel?
Oh, the Tower of Babel. Yes, that would, and I was trying to look back at my notes on that, but that would probably be on the order of about 700 years.
So did it happen within within Noah's lifetime?
Well, he would have been dead by that time, mm-hmm. but certainly his sons were, you know, and their ancestors were very much alive at that time. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the migration then from the point of the Tower of Babel, when God confused the languages and the folks had to spread out into various areas, would have been in about the same time frame we're looking at here. That is, with certainly within the 4,000 time frame from the time of the flood. Mm-hmm. So you had in, and we know also that in general, where the Japhites, for example, the descendants of Japheth, you know, wound up, which was Russia and Germany and, you know, Europe, for example, and the Hamites. The Shamites, of course, went to where Israel and the Jordan and that area. Then you had the Hamites, which went to Africa. And some of those also went west via India over into the Asian part of the area. So you had the Japhites coming from the north going to Asia, and the Hamites coming from the south. The Hamites coming from the south going over towards Asia as well. But this would have been these folks would have been Hamites from, if they're, you know, if they're coming from South Africa or from Africa up and migrating into Spain, they would have been of the heritage of the Hamites, which would have been an interesting study in itself to see if indeed their heritage was ultimately from the Hamites, which I would guess that it would have been, because it's fairly close to the time of when the Tower of Babel would have broken up, if you're not the tower itself, but the people being dispersed from the Tower of Babel.
Well, they'd have to take DNA, mitochondrial DNA from South Africans then, to trace where they came from, which would mean the Fertile Crescent, if it conformed with what we learned from the Bible.
Right. Yes, it would have had to come. They would have, you know, obviously come from that area, mm-hmm. Because that's where all of civilization was in the early part of history, was in the Fertile Crescent, you know, that area. It wasn't until, you know, much later, after Babylonian kingdom and the Egyptian, mm-hmm. you know, the kingdom and the pharaohs and that type of stuff, and then until you had you know, Greece and Alexander the Great coming along and defeating, you know, those peoples in those areas, and you know, forming his global government, if you will, at the time, and then eventually, of course,
so then we have new DNA evidence now. This is science talking that revises the earlier thought about when migration happened north from Africa into Europe, in this case through Spain. And the new analysis says it's more in keeping with what the biblical story of creation tells us. So what's stopping science from tracing back the DNA from those Africans? Because to my knowledge, science still would say, no, man first came to be man in Africa. They would maybe other things started in the Fertile Crescent, you know, cultures and societies and agriculture and that kind of thing. But that we derived from hunter-gatherers and people who came down out of the trees in Central Africa, not the Fertile Crescent. What's stopping research from finding that link between the Fertile Crescent and Africa?
What's stopping is an assumption, you know, that we evolved. Yeah, that's what's stopping it, because there's no reason why not to do that research and to say, hey, you know, this is everybody on Earth ultimately came from where the Tower of Babel was, migrated from that general area, the Plain of Shinar, as we know it, today. And so it would be, you know, of course, confirmative information that would confirm the biblical record, if you will, that's in Genesis. You know, a lot of people think that Genesis, especially the earlier chapters, is just a collection of myths, just to say how man came about, and we needed those myths in order to start, you know, building some type of civilization. Well, they're not myths at all. It's actually a historic record. So when the genealogies, for example, in Genesis chapter 10 and Genesis chapter 9, when those genealogies are laid down, this is a historical record of the various genealogies of the people that essentially migrated from obviously came from the Ark and then migrated from the Babylonian area over to the various parts of the world. So, you know, we can learn a lot if we start with the right assumptions and say that, oh, you know, let's look at this model to see if the data actually fit that model, and we can put together a more accurate picture of ancient man and where we came from. Now, the other thing that was, you know, mentioned in this article was, and you could lose it if you didn't, you know, look at it very, very closely, but it's that the Strait of Gibraltar, that those seas there is very, very rough. And so to cross the seas, this was one reason why they were saying that, no, you know, people couldn't have crossed that because they couldn't have built ships to handle that rough of water because, in quote, they weren't smart enough. Well, guess what? If indeed this study is accurate, I believe, at least the information seems reasonable, then they did build ships, and the ships were quite adequate in order to cross the strait, in order to migrate up through the southern part, you know, of Spain and the Portugal, that area, and begin populating, you know, that area from the south, as opposed to the Japhethites were populating that, you know, the Europe and northern Europe, from the north. Even that would suggest, and highly suggest, that, hey, you know, these people are not dumb. They indeed were intelligent and, probably more intelligent than we are today, in that their cranial power, since, you know, they're closer to the time of creation, their cranial power would have been, you know, more intact than what we have today, you know, as we, in quote, devolve as opposed to evolve.
This is Dr. Don's theory of devolution, which we talk about occasionally here. And that's a result of other DNA research that says that our DNA actually takes on mutations with every generation and degrades, not gets better. Oh, it might get more specialized. It might adapt us to existing conditions around here a little bit. But it's not what evolutionists are portraying. It's simply us getting dumber, to sum it up and to make a glittering generality out of it, which suggests that the people who came before us were much brighter.
Exactly.
And think about the conditions that they survived in and passed on the life stream to us. We're standing on their shoulders, aren't we?
Well, yeah, exactly. And so, you know, you don't often think that Egypt had, for example, a lot of technology, but they did. I mean, the Egyptians were doing cataract surgery long before we were. And, you know, it took us thousands of years to come up with a technique for, you know, getting rid of a cloudy lens. Well, they had, you know, special tools to do that. Well, they weren't doing the surgeries that we're doing today. But so, you know, they did cataract surgeries. They had batteries, for example. And so they must have discovered electricity and then how to, you know, control electricity and how to use electricity to do various things. And, you know, we often think of these folks, so they were very, very primitive. They weren't primitive at all. I mean, they were using the stuff around them, you know, to better their life, if you will. You know, so anyway, all of this is kind of reinforcing it. More reinforces the biblical creation genealogy and history as opposed to, oh, you know, this just, you know, the people evolved from Egypt. I mean, from Africa, and so yes, we're going to have migration up through Spain. If that was the case, then all of Europe would be Hamites, as opposed to most of European peoples are Japhetes.
Well, one other question is it possible that that this mitochondrial DNA process, the study process, reaches a dead end because the chain would be so convoluted? In other words, how do you identify mitochondrial DNA that originated in, say, the Fertile Crescent? When those people might have come from Asia, might have come from Siberia, might have come from Europe over the eons and mixed with other people. How do you isolate Fertile Crescent DNA, for example?
Well, I mean, you'd have to, you know, that particular, you know, DNA, you actually have four different peoples, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have the Japhetes, which we know, you know, Japheth, the sons of Japheth, and of course, you know, his wife, and the Shemites, the sons of Shem and prodigy of Shem and his wife, and then of course the Hamites, and then so you have those. You know, those three sons of Noah, and of course, you know, the three sons of Noah came from Noah, but, you know, Noah had a wife, but before that, there was probably millions of people before the flood, and that DNA is all wrapped up in these three sons and families and generations, if you will, of the original folks that came over from the flood.
So you're saying it should be discernible, that is, science should be able to identify and isolate that mitochondrial DNA.
Well, yes, those three sons were very, very different from one another.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I mean, obviously the Shemites, the descendants of Shem had olive skin, the descendants from Hamites you know, had darker skin than that. And then the sons in the generations of Japhites had lighter skin. And, you know, just on skin color alone, you should, and though the DNA responsible, you know, for that, you should be able to trace something back to the origins, the correct origins, which would have been in, obviously, you know, where the mountains of Ararat is where the Ark landed, and then, you know, as I said, the people migrated off the Ark into the into that plain, kind of southwest of where the Ark landed, and then everything migrated from there after the event at the Tower of Babel.
Now, there's another way of looking at DNA that we talked about here from time to time, and that is scientists have been able to determine the frequency of mutation. And so if you go from the present time back, you can work back to a point when DNA was in its original state. And
you can, and guess what you come up with? For man, as far as we are aware, man is not less, I mean, is not older than 6,000 or 7,000 years old. You know, that DNA. And of course, you could do the same thing for animals. And if you, and the mutation rates are different, you know, for different species or kinds, but you wind up in the same place, which should tell you that we started at the same time.
And that DNA also indicates just enough time for the mutations they find in us now to have stemmed from eight people about 4,000 years ago. Is that not true also?
I believe that's correct, but I'm not bringing it to my mind at the moment. Yeah. As the study that was that might have been responsible for that.
Interesting. It's what's fascinating is that high tech research using DNA and various study techniques could very well be guiding us back to Genesis.
Very much so.
Wouldn't that be something? Dr. Don Clark is a member of the Board of Creation Moments. I want to mention their website. It's creationmoments.com. There's a link at brokenroadradio.com. Click on that, and you can introduce yourself to just a wealth of scientific information that explains and supports and buttresses the biblical account of creation. It's a good place to visit. I recommend it, creationmoments.com. Dr. Don Clark, nice work today. Thank you. I've learned something.
Very good. Well, thank you. Yes, it's been fun as usual. So we will see you in another week.
We'll look forward to that. Take care.